from UALR Public Radio and the Argenta Arts Foundation. This is a Tales from the South Tin Roof Project.
One night I was on the phone with my current crush, Alex, when I heard my dad's voice billow on the phone, "Hang up now." And there, I believe, is where my fabulous life ended.
Recorded in front of a live audience at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas.
So just one short year later, when I got the news in my biology class of the coup, and my parents told me that they loved us over the phone, just a world away, I felt my whole world was falling apart.
This week, it's an intimate dinner with a notable Southerner on our unrehearsed show, telling their story as if they were sitting on the porch with you.
And as the dust settled and we made our home in Canada, it became more and more apparent that although I got my family back, our home was destroyed, our village, and our money was gone.
So sit back, relax, and reconnect with the power of a story. Now, let's go live to Tales from the South.
If it ain't love, then it ain't rock and roll, and you're the blue suede shoes to suit my soul. So give me a man with a heart of gold. If it ain't love, then it ain't rock and roll. Oh, well, if it ain't love, then it ain't rock and roll. You're the blue suede shoes to suit my soul. So I need a man with a heart of gold. If it ain't love, then it ain't rock and roll. If it ain't love, then it ain't rock and roll.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Audrey Dean Kelly? What'd you think? You can find out more about Audrey on ReverbNation.com. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to a very special edition of Tales from the South, a monthly series we call the Tin Roof Project, where well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, all right here in North Little Rock, Arkansas. And I'm your host, Paula Morell. On my left here, strumming his 1931 National Resonator, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? What do you think about our set? These genuine screen doors from the Arkansas Delta with mixed media portraiture are by esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox from her Images of the American South collection. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of these works goes to Tales from the South. More can be seen at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern style storytelling? Internationally acclaimed fashion designer Keto Momolu Briggs was born in Monrovia, Liberia. After graduation from Design Institute in Ottawa, Ontario, and then continuing her education at the renowned Parsons School of Design, Keto won first runner-up on the fifth season of Bravo TV's hit show Project Runway and was voted fan favorite. She was our favorite too. Keto presented her spring 2009 collection at Bryant Park during New York Fashion Week. Highlighted as a top five designer to watch by New York Magazine for fall 2010 collections at New York Fashion Week, Keto has been featured in Southern Living, People, Essence, Couture, the LA Times, LadyBrill.com, InStyle.com, and Washingtonian, among others. TV and radio appearances include The Monique Show, Regis and Kelly, The Wendy Williams Show, My Black is Beautiful, The Tom Joyner Morning Show, and most recently on CNN International's African Voices. Keto moved to Arkansas in 1999, where she lives with her husband and daughter, creating chic women's wear and accessories that are influenced by her African roots and inspired by rich fabrics. Tonight, Keto takes us back to the day she received news that changed everything in No Side Deals Are Necessary. Ladies and gentlemen, Keto Momolu.
I'll never forget the breezy spring morning in May of 1990 when I walked into my Canadian boarding school biology class to hear my instructor shout out casually, "There was some sort of coup in Liberia this morning, wasn't there? Did you hear about it?" My heart just sank. I'm originally from the most beautiful West African coastal city, Monrovia, Liberia. While my older sister Sugar and I were attending an exclusive Trafalgar Castle boarding school in Ontario, Canada, my mom, my dad, and my little brother were still living in Liberia. As my biology teacher's voice bounced around the room, my immediate thought was to call home and prove him wrong. He had to be wrong. Instead, I walked and asked to go to the restroom and snuck into the break room. The newspaper I found there confirmed the awful truth. There was a coup. My dad worked in the government, which meant immediate death by firing squad if he was captured. Phone lines were down, and we could do nothing but pray and wait. 3 days later, we got a phone call. My parents were somber but hopeful. We were told to not worry, and in my mind, I'm very sarcastic. I'm thinking, yeah, right, don't worry. And pray, my mom said, pray. For the first time in what seemed like forever, I heard both my mom and dad say the words, "I love you." Things was worse than I thought at that moment because my parents were true African parents. They showed you they loved you, didn't tell you they love you. And for that second time in my young life, I asked myself, why did I have to gamble with God? Just 3 short years earlier, I was finally living the life I'd always fantasized about. It was the summer of 1987. My friends were great, my first real live boyfriend, and I was slowly starting to check off the list on my long, lengthy teenage to-do list. First kiss, check. Visible hickeys I could show off at school the next day, check. And parents that were completely unaware of what I was up to, double check. At least so I thought. Life was fabulous. I never imagined that after waiting for a boyfriend forever, that I would dump him weeks after we became an official item to date other guys for the summer. There was Sam, there was Archie and Willie. The romances didn't last very long though. Some one day, some weeks. It just depended on my mood swings or how quickly I met my next crush. After all, summer was only 2 months long, and I wanted to enjoy my newfound independence. One night, I was on the phone with my current crush, Alex. And Alex and I were just talking about absolutely nothing. When I heard my dad's voice billow on the phone, "Hang up now." And there, I believe, is where my fabulous life ended. My sister and I were both summoned to my parents' room to an impromptu family meeting. My dad proceeded to tell us that not only did he know we were dating boys, but he was been listening to our phone calls the entire summer. And not only was he shocked, but him and my mom were very disappointed in us. At this time, I was reliving my conversations and thinking, they're borderline boring. So my sister's life must have been the one that was more fabulous than mine. So not only were we grounded for the rest of the summer, we were subjected to a life of pure misery by way of nonstop housework. The beginning of the school year brought the end to the housework. Eventually, word came of my dad's phone invasion, and the schoolyard jokes began. They lasted a little while, and then things began to seem a little normal after a bit, but not quick enough for me, because both of my parents worked and traveled frequently. My extended family, who I like to call AKA the village, became much larger and a little bit more attentive to what I was doing thanks to my dad, and my fabulous life was officially on a hiatus. I decided maybe it was for the best. Maybe there was a lesson to be learned here somewhere and I would find out later. And then the teachers went on strike. At first, it was like getting a second chance for summer vacation. But then it got serious. 1 month turned to 2 months and then to 3. My parents began prepping us for possible life abroad at boarding schools. This made me sick to my stomach because I was thinking, wow, places like Geneva, Switzerland, and Toronto were flying around as possible places to ship us. and I couldn't believe this was going to happen. I was finally getting out of my shell, speaking to people, being sociable. And here I was about to go to a foreign land and start school and my life from scratch. I secretly made these deals with God to reverse the strike. These deals obviously were things that I did to try to help the situation. And this seemed like the last but the best resort, since he was the only one I felt that could get me out of what was possibly going to be the biggest ordeal of my life. Unfortunately, the deals with God fell through. And the final destination for us was Canada. Montreal was where my little brother went, and Whitby, Ontario for me and my sister. My youngest brother, Gallier, he was too young, so he actually stayed back and lived with my parents in Liberia, and he felt the most pain I felt. He would be left alone with our parents to be an only child. I cried and I hugged him and my dad before getting on the plane with my mom and Sugar. Sugar is my sister, by the way. She's supposed to be really sweet, but you'll find out later. My heart officially sank and was broken, and my soul fell apart as I tried again to make one last minute desperate plea with God. Why would he break out my family? And what could I do to make him change what seemed to be my inevitable destiny? Whitby was probably one of the most depressing places in all of Canada. As we drove down this small, windy road for what seemed like an eternity, the vision of the castle that would be my home for the next 4 years slowly appeared. All I could think of was, you had to gamble with God, didn't you? My sister and I barely had words since the phone incident with my dad, so it was like I was going through this all alone. To cheer us up, my mom went all the way out and got us a limo to drive us from the airport to school. They were like cheap thrills, and they didn't help the impending sadness we would feel. We met our principal and our house mother once we entered the school, and with a little organized distraction, I turned around and saw my mother was gone. No hugs, no kisses, just a hard bang of the castle walls closing, and she was gone, and we were escorted to our rooms. In similar fashion, my sister was whisked away to her wing, and I was escorted to my wing. And I remember patiently from my house mother to break down the rules. There were like a million of the rules. There was rules for going to the bathroom, or rules for speaking, and rules for going to school the next day. And as soon as she left, I began to sob for what seemed like hours. The crying didn't stop. Every minute I got alone, I wallowed in my sorrow. And I literally made myself homesick. And after 3 nights in the castle's infirmary, I decided to woman up and just face the music. To my surprise, Trafalgar Castle School wasn't so bad after all. The months progressed and things got better. There were many girls from all over the world. We made friendships that turns out that one would last beyond the castle walls. We began to take advantage of the great experiences our parents were paying for, and there were many. We took in Broadway plays, went to the symphony, and I even learned how to ski. Well, kind of, a little bit, not quite. Didn't quite make it down to Bunny Hill, but I did get up there. At the age of 13, I was doing my own laundry, shopping, my own hair, learning how to save and budget my own money, or rather my parents' money, as we got allowances every month. It was the time where the love for my arts actually began, the beginning of my love affair with what would change the rest of my life. I was finally able to tap back into the things that I loved to do, and I was excelling. Close to the end of my 10th grade year in 1989, my sister Sugar and I got to go home to Liberia for summer vacation. The visit proved to be just what our family needed. Seeing all my friends, my family, and AKA the village had grown so much since we had left, and catching up with everybody, even some old crushes, kind of helped my shattered soul. Liberia was just as beautiful as I remembered it. And going home made an experience I would hold close to my heart on cold Canadian nights. My sister Sugar and I returned to Trafalgar Castle to complete high school. So just one short year later, when I got the news in my biology class of the coup, and my parents told me that they loved us over the phone, just a world away, I felt my whole world was falling apart. The next few weeks would prove to be the worst of my life to date. Every day we heard news of people being murdered and children being slayed and children being put into child military camps. Friends being murdered, not knowing if our mom or dad and my brother were safe. It kind of made things kind of unbearable, not hearing anything, not seeing anything that was familiar to me, but seeing the chaos as it played out on CNN. Finally, in late June, we got word from the embassy that they were granted political asylum in Canada and that our family would be put back together again. We were given the second chance to live together as a family, and something that I never thought would actually happen. I always thought I would get punished in some way for these deals I kept making with God, but it did happen. And as the dust settled and we made our home in Canada, it became more and more apparent that although I got my family back, we would lose everything else. Our home was destroyed, our village were constantly being taken away from us, and our money was gone. I was grateful but saddened that I couldn't go back to the place I knew as home. We were officially in exile, and our future seemed unsure, but at least at the end of the day, we were stable, we were alive, and we were given the second chance to move forward. My last year of high school was kind of up in the air at the time. We were refugees in Canada, we had no status in the country, so we had to pay for private school or just stay out of school until we were processed through immigration to be officially legal aliens there. It was my graduation year, and although I hated Trafalgar Castle upon arrival, it had grown to be a place I loved, and the friends I made throughout the years I've grown to cherish. I wanted dearly to finish high school there and go back to a sense of stability that had become so familiar to me. My father made me write a letter to the school stating our new financial status, and he asked if there was any way that school could assist with my tuition. To this day, I believe he made me write that letter because he wanted to show me that it was official that life had changed. And by writing that letter, it opened my eyes to the new awakening that nothing's promised in life. And sometimes you have to do things you never think you're going to have to do for the better of the family. Trafalgar Castle came through. They gave me a full scholarship. It was probably the most humbling thing in my life today. And at the same time, it almost made me ashamed because this is the one place I condemned upon arrival. And then it was the one place that gave me the biggest gift of my life, the chance to finish high school with my friends, to finish my high school year with some kind of stability and normalcy, knowing what I had been through. Can never repay them for that gift. The day I graduated from high school, I stood on the stone steps of the castle, surrounded by my family, and I looked up in the sky. We may not have had our home, our village has shrunk so much, and our money was gone, but we had each other, and we had no way of knowing that it would be exactly to the day 23 years later before I would make my joyful return back to Liberia, along with a classmate, a best friend that I made in Trafalgar. I also had no way of knowing what God had in store for me. But as I hugged my mom and dad on the sunny spring day, what I did know was that I needed to trust God because he knows everything and he knows what he's doing. So there were no need for any side deals. There were no side deals necessary. Thank you for listening.
All right, so thank you so much, Kato Momolu, for being on our Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South. So in your story, at the beginning, you get the news in biology class about the coup in Liberia, and then it's 3 days before you hear anything from your parents at all. So what were those 3 days like for you? Were you able to go to class and function, and were you just constantly waiting for the phone, or what was that like?
It was probably the longest 3 days of my life because no one else could understand what we were going through, you know, and we'd heard of other coups where we saw videos of the ministers and the government officials being lined up on the beach and being killed by firing squad. And we knew that the women were taken into captivity as sex slaves and the kids were taken as toy soldiers. So I just imagined that that could possibly be my future. We could never see our family again. What was going to happen to us? We're in this country with nobody. So it was probably the worst thing for any child to go through, not knowing and being, you turn back, and even though I was doing all these things and becoming an adult, it's like you go back to being that kid again. You just want to hear that voice that says everything's going to be okay.
And so Sugar was at the same school you were in Canada. And so how did she find out? Did you find out first or the same time, or how did that happen?
I actually found out from my biology teacher. He was kind of like a really nerdy one. He said little things, and he was actually saying it really happy when he said there was a coup. I'm like, so it took a while for it to sink in. So I actually found her, and I told her, and we both kind of just looked in silence, just not wanting to say anything. And then when that phone call came, you know, once my parents said, I love you, we're both like, oh, God, this is really serious. They're saying they love us. She ran off crying, and I just stood there like, are we going to see you again? And, you know, my dad just said, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. We love you. He said it twice. That's when I thought, oh, God, they're going to die. You know, but thank God they didn't.
All right. Well, we have a few minutes here at the end for audience questions.
Recently, two Liberian women received the Nobel Peace Prize and wanted to ask you about your thoughts about that.
I think that's amazing because one of them was our first female president in all of Africa who happens to be the president of Liberia, who I've actually got the chance to meet and design for. I think Liberia is definitely on its way up. We need so much help. I think we would love to be that place where the U.S. rebuilds their relationship back with us and come in and just give us that guidance to grow. But I think that's a step that for the first female president in all of Africa that it could happen, and now for her to win and share a Nobel Peace Prize with a fellow Liberian, that's amazing. And, you know, she definitely holds one of those places where you live up to. You know, she was arrested, she was jailed, she was tortured during the coup, during the war by Charles Taylor and his soldiers, and now she's the president. So it's just that story where it doesn't matter what you go through. Sometimes you might go through things and wonder how you're going to get out of it, but when you hear stories like that, or even stories like my own, you can get through anything. I tell kids all the time when I talk at schools, you're not going through nothing. Let me tell you a story.
I have two questions. One, what are your other siblings doing for their professional lives? And then secondly, I know that you have clothed or designed clothing for a lot of well-known people, celebrities, because I follow you on Facebook. Is there a celebrity that you have not yet designed for that you would like to?
It's funny because my siblings are all still in Canada. I'm the only one that got tired of -40 degrees weather and snow to your kneecaps. So Sugar lives in Montreal. She has 3 kids. She's married, and she works in the banking field. She was the one that I always felt like was always giving my dad what he really loved. I was the problem child who was an artist. My brother, Galia, the youngest, he's actually a professional skateboarder, so I can kind of relate to him. We're like the ones that came out of left field, like, where did we come from? And he lives in Vancouver. And my other brother, Clarence, he lives in Ottawa still. He still loves that cold weather. And he's floating. He's the floating child. He goes from one profession, one job to the next, but he's been a professional woman's man, definitely. He's a charmer, so very much like my dad. And for celebrity-wise, I mean, Oprah's always been my idol in the sense that hearing her story and all the things that she went through and how hard she worked to get to where she was is definitely somebody I would love to dress. I got to meet her last year. I got to touch her. So it just made it real. Like, I met this woman. I touched her. I could definitely achieve everything she has and more. You know, she's just a regular chick with her heels in her hand because her feet hurt. I'm like, you see, she's just like me. So she's on my list. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it one day.
So, Kato, you've been around the world a few times and quite cosmopolitan. So how are you liking it in Little Rock and North Little Rock?
You know what? I'll be honest. I always tell people this. When I first came here, it was one of those God moments. Like, me and God talk a lot, if you haven't noticed. And I was like, okay, you're trying to punish me. You're trying to be really funny. Because what am I doing here? You know, and it was funny because when I met my husband, he was from here. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll come visit. And when I came to visit, it was fun. I loved it. But then I never thought I'd live here, so I was okay with him being from here. That was just something about him we talk about. I said, oh, yeah, he's from Arkansas. But when I finally did come and move here, I was like, okay, well, we are moving back to Atlanta, right? And it was like, yeah, we're going to move. But for whatever reason, stuff kept happening, and So I told God to just let me know if he wanted me to be an attorney, to just let me know. And I would go to Euler and just do that. But eventually I started meeting the faces that would make this place my home, a place that I love, a place that I represent, you know, the John Rogers of the world, the art scene, and, you know, all the people I've met and surrounded with here. It's like God just brought all these people to my life, and they created this extra bigger puzzle that I never imagined. I never imagined I'd still be here. This would be home. I wouldn't be running out of here to move to New York. I'm constantly defending it everywhere I go. Why are you still there? And I'm like, well, just come visit, and then I'll show you. You'll get it. You know, it's one of those things, like, you have to come here to get it. I can't tell you about it, you know? But it's home. My little girl is born here. She has her little twang, twang, twang accent. My husband's from here. I even say finna now. You know, it's, I'm one of you guys now. I haven't done the Razorback thing yet. I'm not there yet, but it's home, and I love it. And for the longest time before I went to Liberia, I just wanted that. I just wanted a place that I could say, I'm going home and feel it in here. Not some generic place that I had to be, or some place that, you know, we just happened to be because the Canadian government let us in. It was a place that when I say I'm coming home, this is what I'm talking about. Getting through that airport in 10 minutes, coming home in 15, no traffic. You know, just people that speak and say hi. And I finally learned what Southern hospitality was when I moved here. All these people would always wave to my husband and be like, you know a lot of people, you just moved back here. And he's like, no, that's what they call Southern hospitality. People, we just speak and we just show you love. And that's an amazing thing. So I'm glad that you've considered me to be one of you, because you're kind of stuck with me.
Well, we're glad you're here. All right, so how about our story and storyteller tonight? What'd y'all think? Thank you so much, Kato Momolu, for being on our Tin Roof Project on Tales from the South. Thank you to our live audience, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library. Additional support provided by the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Winthrop Rockefeller Institute, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can download and listen to our podcast on our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation in North Little Rock, Arkansas. Discover more at argentaartsdistrict.org. Our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle magazine at aymag.com. Additional support provided by the Winthrop Rockefeller Institute at livethelegacy.org. Also, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau and Oxford American Magazine, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing at oxfordamerican.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern style storytelling alive, and we'll see you next week, either on this station or at Starving Artist Cafe, for another edition of Tales from the South.